Ladies and gentlemen, hello, and thank you all for joining this Kids in Need of Defense media telebriefing, Administration Policies Stacking the Deck Against Unaccompanied Kids at the Border. All lines are in a listen-only mode, and instructions on how to signal for a live question will be shared after today's prepared remarks. As a friendly reminder, today's session is being recorded. And now to get us started with opening remarks and introductions, I am pleased to yield the floor to Wendy Young, President, Kids in Need of Defense. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Wendy Young, and I'm President of KIND. Thank you so much for joining the call today. We know it's a really busy news cycle right now, and we appreciate you taking the time to dial in on these issues. Today's conversation, of course, is happening against a complex background that I want to address up front before we begin. Obviously, while we have no reports of any current viral health crisis at U.S. facilities that house unaccompanied children, we are aware that the current coronavirus outbreak and the ongoing flu season can pose risks to children. So this is a dynamic situation that requires real-time monitoring and informed decision-making to ensure the safety of the kids. And while during this call we will address the need to abandon the practice of unnecessary video teleconference usage for children in the immigration court system, we're not saying that this technology could never be used in instances where its usage is in the best interest of the child, and that is especially true when it comes to protecting their health and welfare. But having said that, we are clearly not in that situation right now, and the plan to transport and bring these kids into courtrooms without a live judge who can hear their case is clearly not in their best interest. Unaccompanied immigrant children are among the world's most vulnerable populations. They are toddlers to teenagers who have often fled life-threatening harm in their home countries and face continuing trauma following their arrival in the United States. And despite these unique vulnerabilities, the Trump administration is implementing a series of major policy changes expressly targeting unaccompanied children that fundamentally undermine their access to U.S. protection. Beginning on March 9th, all cases of detained unaccompanied children at the Houston Immigration Court will be heard via video teleconference, or VTC, potentially an initial step towards the establishment of a single national VTC docket for all detained unaccompanied children throughout the country. VTC hearings raise profound due process concerns. They make it an incredibly challenging process for children, even more difficult to understand, if not impossible, and will isolate the child from her attorney in the process as a whole. On top of this, just recently, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is the custodial agency for unaccompanied children, issued a directive requiring all legal service providers to meet detained unaccompanied kids in ORR detention facilities instead of allowing for the child's transportation to a more appropriate location at their representative's law office. This will broadly restrict children's access to counsel and heighten challenges associated with the recruitment of and placement of children's cases with pro bono attorneys. On top of that, these changes come after the Executive Office for Immigration Review's reiteration in January that immigration judges should complete children's cases within 60 days, a standard that virtually renders it impossible for many children to obtain counsel or to file applications for potentially life-saving relief from deportation. In isolation, any one of these changes would substantially limit the ability of unaccompanied children to receive a fair day in court. Taken together, they pose what for tens of thousands of kids could prove insurmountable barriers to humanitarian protection in the United States and may result in the return to further harm and even death. Today, I'm joined by a terrific panel of experts, and I'm about to turn that over to them. But first will be Jason Boyd, Director of Policy here at KIND, Kids in Need of Defense, followed by Judy Perry Martinez, who's President of the American Bar Association, and finally, John Sullivan, practicing attorney and member of KIND's Houston Advisory Committee. I'd now like to turn the call over to Jason Boyd, who can offer some additional insights into these troubling developments and the due process barriers that they create.
Great. Thanks so much, Wendy. This is Jason Boyd with KIND. I really appreciate everyone joining the call today. As Wendy mentioned, I will address in turn each of the three main policy shifts under discussion, as well as their troubling due process implications. First, with regard to the VTC pilot program in Houston, the Houston Immigration Court has informed legal service providers that beginning March 9th, an immigration judge based at the Atlanta Immigration Court will hear via video teleconference, VTC, all Houston immigration court cases involving detained unaccompanied children, a change impacting up to 1,500 children. The ICE trial attorneys will also be located in the Atlanta courtroom. As noted, this pilot program could represent an initial step towards the establishment of a single national VTC docket encompassing every detained unaccompanied child throughout the country. As Wendy mentioned, VTC raises profound due process barriers for immigrants generally and children in particular. To begin with, even in-person immigration court proceedings are challenging for children to comprehend. Remote hearings multiply those challenges. Camera positions may diminish children's capacity to see their own attorneys, ICE trial attorneys, and interpreters. And frequently, technical problems, including poor audio feeds, may prevent a child from properly hearing the proceedings. VTC also often diminishes children's ability to engage in essential interaction with their attorneys. Specifically, use of this technology compels those attorneys to make an impossible choice. On the one hand, attorneys can appear in the Atlanta courtroom, where the immigration judge and ICE attorney are located. In doing so, attorneys forego the option to confer confidentially with their clients, running the risk that children make uninformed decisions with far-reaching consequences for their futures. On the other hand, attorneys can appear in the Houston courtroom alongside their clients. But under this scenario, attorneys may be unable to properly observe and respond to court proceedings. What is more, ICE trial attorneys and immigration judges may engage in private communications that could have fundamental implications for case outcomes. The first choice is a bad one. Unfortunately, so is the second. To ensure due process and fundamental fairness in these children's proceedings, the only viable option is for EOIR to pull the plug altogether on this VTC pilot. And I want to note that this pilot program will directly impact KIND's clientele. Some of our clients now scheduled for VTC hearings in Houston, have special vulnerabilities that exacerbate the due process concerns already addressed while also presenting others. For instance, children who speak indigenous languages that could result in added interpretation challenges over video. Children with cognitive impairments, including difficulty speaking, for whom VTC could impose heightened communication obstacles. Vulnerable kids like these deserve a full and fair opportunity to have their protection claims heard, not VTC proceedings plagued by due process deprivations. Now, just on its own, the Houston VTC pilot would present severe barriers to due process for unaccompanied children. Regrettably, the policy shifts keep coming. Under longstanding Office of Refugee Resettlement policy, unaccompanied children detained in OR facilities had the option of meeting with their attorneys at law offices. Recently, however, ORR reversed this policy, requiring attorneys instead to meet with their clients directly at OR facilities. Now, in a number of critical respects, this policy shift will restrict this vulnerable population's access to counsel. As a practical matter, the distance between law offices and OR facilities, along with other logistical complications, will make it substantially more difficult for attorneys to interact with these children, undermining the effectiveness of representation. In addition, this change will make it more challenging for children to obtain attorneys in the first place. Many detained children are represented by pro bono counsel who took on the cases with the understanding that ORR case managers would transport the children to their law offices. Given practical constraints facing these attorneys, the elimination of this transportation option would preclude many of them from volunteering for such cases moving forward. Finally, clients who have undergone serious trauma may not feel comfortable disclosing details of their cases unless it's in the privacy of legal service offices. OR space is often non-confidential, meaning that disclosures made by children to their attorneys in OR facilities could be overheard by other parties. So in such settings, clients may not readily disclose critical case facts. We're talking about facts such as traumatic events at the core of their protection claims, which can jeopardize the outcome of their cases. Importantly, And this is important to note. By helping kids understand when they're eligible for humanitarian protection, assisting with their preparation, the preparation of their cases, and lending support during court proceedings, children's attorneys often mean the difference between relief and deportation. So by reducing the availability and effectiveness of counsel, this shift in OR policy leaves unaccompanied children at heightened risk of return to danger. Lastly, yet another policy instituted under the Trump administration has erected barriers between unaccompanied children and legal representation. In January 2020, EOIR reaffirmed that immigration judges should complete the cases of detained unaccompanied children within 60 days. It's important to note that most children are not able to access pro bono counsel until they've been released from federal custody and reunited with a sponsor in the United States. Considering that unaccompanied children's average length of stay in federal custody is around 60 days, this draconian case completion timeframe would preclude many children from being able to secure counsel. This requirement will also make it virtually impossible for many children to file applications for relief with USCIS. A majority of unaccompanied children in proceedings apply for humanitarian protection through USCIS, but that agency normally takes longer than 60 days to adjudicate an application, meaning that even children who are eligible for protection may be unjustly ordered deported due to EOIR's untenable case completion timeline. In fact, KIND has observed nonsensical court outcomes in which USCIS has approved children's applications for humanitarian protection, yet as those children waited for the visas associated with that relief to become available, judges went ahead and ordered them removed from the United States. Making matters worse, I'll just briefly mention, ICE has announced a change in practice in Houston under which detained unaccompanied children must appear in Houston immigration court within days of their arrival at nearby shelters. This shift will only elevate the barriers to counsel erected by both the OR policy shift and the 60-day case completion deadline. I'll leave it there, and Wendy, turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Jason, for that overview, and I'll turn it over immediately to Judy Perry Martinez, President of the American Bar Association. Judy?
Thank you, Wendy. It's a privilege for the American Bar Association to continue to work with you in KIND on this and other important issues facing children in our nation's immigration courts. Two summers ago, I spent a week doing volunteer legal work on the border in southern Texas with immigrants and asylum seekers, and I wanted to see firsthand and assess the need so that when I went around the country recruiting pro bono lawyers and urging policy changes, I understood the challenges that were being faced by children, unaccompanied children, and adults in detention. And then I did it again this past summer. That first summer in 2018, I toured a children's shelter to see the conditions there firsthand. And my visit made me think about the many questions that must go through the young minds of an unaccompanied child who has just entered our country and is in government custody. And going to court for a litigant or even a witness can mean walking into an unfamiliar place with unknown players and can raise current concerns and fears in anyone. For a child, it must be truly troubling, if not terrifying, especially for a child who doesn't speak English, who doesn't know what to expect in a U.S. courtroom, who may not have a lawyer or other trusted adult to guide him or her. Imagine how much more bewildering that experience must be for a child in a courtroom with no judge in person live there with them, only a small TV screen. This past August, I again went to the Texas border for a week to work with the staff of the American Bar Association Pro Bar. I saw a young immigrant boy in court who was about 8 years old, and that little boy was fortunate enough to have counsel at his side. One thing I noticed, though, in particular, was that the kind and calming and patient physical presence of the immigration judge in that courtroom was felt. It was seen and it was sensed, because while the experience must have been certainly intimidating for that little boy, the judge's physical presence did mean that he had someone to speak to, someone who was speaking to him. I can't imagine what that little boy who spoke no English would have felt if the only person that he could relate to in any sense was on a TV screen. At the ABA, we've worked directly with immigrants and asylum seekers for decades. Our projects in Texas and in California help children and adults who would otherwise have no one at all. Our experience led by the ABA's Commission on Immigration to create model standards for the custody and placement and care and legal representation of unaccompanied children, immigrants, has meant a lot and has done much to help make sure that due process is afforded. Those standards were first published in 2004 and updated in 2018, and they start with a simple but critical preamble that includes this caution. And I quote, "Existing policies protecting children throughout the system are often ignored, and some are in jeopardy of being rescinded." That is precisely why we're here today. One of the cardinal standards of care of children and how we will treat them as consumers of justice in our nation's immigration courts is about to be rescinded. And the ABA opposes that change. It is contrary to every principle that we stand for, and it does not improve justice. It does not deliver justice. Quite the opposite. In 2010, the ABA adopted a policy on video teleconferencing in immigration courts for adults and children. It urges limiting use of video conferencing to procedural matters for adults in which non-citizens have given consent. 7 years later, in 2017, a study of immigration courts conducted by a contractor hired by the U.S. Justice Department came to the very same conclusion. The consultant, Booz Allen Hamilton, wrote that video conferencing should be limited only to procedural matters. The researcher wrote, and I quote, "Faulty VTC equipment, especially issues associated with poor video and sound quality, can disrupt cases to the point that due process issues may arise." In 2018, the ABA expanded that principle to further protect children in immigration proceedings. Our standards state clearly, a child shall have the right to be physically present at any immigration adjudication or any other court proceeding involving the child. That means all proceedings involving children, including master calendar hearings and merits hearings, should be conducted live and not via video conference. We know from experience that children are often profoundly confused when they appear in court proceedings in which the judge and the government attorney and sometimes even the interpreter appear by TV. Adults are often confused in that situation. Children cannot comprehend that the man or woman on the TV screen is actually making decisions that control their lives and their destiny. They don't understand the role of the participants on the screen. They feel disconnected and uninvolved. They are less likely to talk. In short, they are more likely to lose their case. And that's not just speculation. A 2015 UCLA study found that detained litigants in immigration courts that used televideo technology were more likely than detained in-person litigants to be deported. Why? Because they did not engage with the judge and others the same way as in-person litigants do. And that's with a study about adults. Imagine the dire differences for children. The ABA has extensive experience with children in immigration courts. We have created standards of conduct and care based on that very experience. And those standards recommend strongly that against video teleconferencing in courts involving children, involving anyone actually in immigration proceedings. What is about to happen in Houston commencing next Monday, March 9th, is wrong, and it will hurt children and is contrary to the American pursuit of justice. The ABA, the American Bar Association, opposes the policy, and we need action against it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy, for your leadership on these issues, as well as that of the ABA in defending the due process rights of unaccompanied kids. I'm going to turn it over now to John Sullivan, who is a practicing attorney in Houston and a member of the KIND Houston Advisory Committee, who will talk about his experiences representing children in immigration court. John?
Thank you, Wendy. Yes, so hearing all of this, I must say I'm flabbergasted. I mean, I've been reading about it, but now hearing about it, I'm just really blown away at the erosion of due process rights for the most vulnerable group of people in our country, the children among us. And just to give a little bit more background, so I've been practicing law 32 years. I am on the Kind Advisory Board, but I also do direct representation of children in pro bono proceedings. I've got an active case right now for a child, an unaccompanied minor, that's percolating through the system. And I started doing this work probably 18 years ago when there was a call to lawyers across the country to step up to provide pro bono representation for children in immigration proceedings who were not represented. And when I heard that, I was shocked that we had a population of people, especially children, that were not being represented when charges were being brought against them. And there was an outpouring of support. Lots of lawyers and law firms started to get involved. I started a program at what was then Fulbright and Jaworski in Houston and got a very large team of lawyers involved. They found it to be some of the most gratifying pro bono work they had ever done, and they still have a very robust program there. I then left and was the head of pro bono in Houston, where most of for K&L Gates, and I left there about 6 months ago. But most of our pro bono work was for children in immigration proceedings. And so I've seen it firsthand, and it's been a stacked deck from the beginning, but it's even more so now, and it's to the point where to say it's a stacked deck is understating the problem enormously. I mean, first of all, we're not talking about Article III courts like the federal district courts or even the state courts. We're talking about, you know, immigration courts that are under the executive branch. We're also talking about ICE attorneys, and I've been in hearings where I've seen just unbelievable rudeness by ICE attorneys toward children, immigrant children. And it's just been appalling. You would never, ever see that in, you know, district courts where I do commercial litigation, ever. And you just got to bite your tongue, kind of grin and bear it. But that's in a setting where the judge is there, the lawyer confronting the child is there, and I'm there to protect the child. If the judge, the EOIR judge is in Atlanta or wherever by video, and so is the attorney confronting the child with the charges, there's no telling what sort of discussion, ex parte discussions, which are repugnant to due process, would be happening without the lawyer representing the child being involved. And then I won't go on and on because we got limited time here. I mean, Jason and Wendy and Judy have all said it so well. I mean, there's just, when it comes to children, we all have children. We know this. I mean, even children here that are legal have trouble talking to adults sometime and talking about things that have happened to them. Take a child that doesn't even speak the language, coming from horrific conditions, maybe going back, if they have to go back, to death, torture, or perhaps worse, and they're expected just to plead out with a translator to a video camera in a court, I don't think so. I don't think that gives a good impression of the United States of America and how we treat the least of these children of all people. I mean, if there should be a protected class, it ought to be our children. So, look, you know, these kids need representation. They can't win these cases without representation. And I can also say that these other policies are going to create such a chilling effect on the ability of pro bono counsel to want to represent, given their already very demanding schedules with their other cases. You know, these kids are going to be without representation. It's going to have the end result, which is really the result that the administration wants, of just getting these kids out of the country without the merits of their human rights situation even being considered in our court system.
Great. Thank you so much, John. I think it's really clear what's happening here. We're seeing a layering of policy upon policy by this administration that is fundamentally stacking the decks against children and undermining their ability to access due process and a fair hearing. So we're calling upon the administration to reverse these policies, including those that have already been implemented, as well as to cancel the Houston pilot project before the video teleconference docket is implemented next week on March 9th, so that children can continue to access humanitarian protection. We're also calling upon Congress to conduct thorough oversight to illuminate the harmful consequences of these measures while directing the agencies to end them without delay. Bottom line, every unaccompanied child deserves a fair day in court. It is the only way we can determine whether they require safety in the United States, protection in the United States, or can be safely returned to their home countries. If these policies are left unchecked, we're going to see the results will be a summary and unjust deportation of many of these kids back to grave danger. So I'd like to open the line up for questions, Jim, if you could moderate. Thank you.
I'd be happy to. And to our audience joining today over the phones, if you'd like to ask a live question over your telephone line, simply press star and one on your telephone keypad. Pressing star and one will place your line into a queue. And a friendly reminder that if you're joining us today on a speakerphone, please return to your handset prior to pressing star and one to be certain that your signal does reach our equipment. Once again, that is star and one if you would like to ask a question. We'll hear first from Lomi Creel at Houston Chronicle. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having this call. So on the ICE policy for issuing the NTAs just a few days after kids are in custody, can you say when that was implemented and where else that's happening? I understand that's also happening in Arizona, and how that's different from the past. And also, if you can confirm the judge in Atlanta will hear this, is Judge Cersei Owen?
Jason?
Yes, this is Jason Boyd with KIND. I can confirm that the judge that will preside over these cases out of the Atlanta courtroom is the Assistant Chief Immigration Judge, Cersei Owens. With regard to your question regarding ICE's swift issuance of NTAs, as you mentioned, that practice that has now been the practice at the Phoenix Immigration Court for a number of months. I don't know precisely when that policy will also go into effect in Houston, but it's my understanding that it will be implemented in tandem with this VTC pilot program that will go into effect beginning Monday of next week. By way of background, historically, ICE has customarily allowed a child who was newly placed in a shelter a number of months before issuing the NTA that would commence that child's immigration proceedings. And that wait time served a number of purposes. First, it allowed the child a reasonable opportunity to obtain counsel, which, as we know, often means the difference between relief and deportation and safety and danger. Second, it gave the child a more adequate opportunity to prepare their case. And third, oftentimes during that, say, two-month period prior to the issuance of an NTA, a child may be released from OR custody into a sponsor that may be located thousands of miles away from the courtroom in which that NTA might have otherwise have been issued. So under this new policy that we were already seeing being implemented in Phoenix and that will be implemented in Houston, the child isn't going to have adequate time to obtain an attorney before their case starts, not going to have adequate time to start preparing their case. And third, it's going to create massive inefficiencies in an already severely overburdened court system because proceeding, a child may now need to change venue to a faraway jurisdiction, and one court will have to transfer the reams of documentation associated with that child's case to the other court. So we've previously heard the government cite claim efficiency gains through the use of VTC and other policies, but really we anticipate that the implementation of the policies under discussion today will produce massive inefficiencies for the court and place considerable operational strain on EOR that will further gum up court operations.
Thank you. And also on this pilot, the VTC pilot, so at this point it's slated to last for at least 2 months, and it's your understanding that the judge, that the merit of the case will also be heard through VTC?
Yes. That is one of the most concerning facets of this pilot program, is that we're not simply talking about master calendar hearings, which often serve a scheduling function in the immigration court system. We're talking about merits hearings, where the fate of a vulnerable child can be determined. And so the fact that their futures may now be decided through poor audio feeds and reduced visibility of immigration judges and oftentimes where a child may be unable to confer with their attorney, who may be the one person they feel they can trust and rely on in the United States, is enormously troubling.
Thank you. And sorry, one last question. On the 60-day reminder, I mean, is this new guidance that was issued last month for unaccompanied minors, or was it just a reminder?
That's a great question. So as reported by Priscilla Alvarez, CNN, who may be on the call in February of this year, in January 2020, EOIR emailed immigration judges essentially to reaffirm that the 60-day case completion requirement applies to all detained removal cases, including those of unaccompanied children. That case completion requirement was issued in January through a memo from EOIR Director McHenry in January 2018. So it was a reaffirmation of that policy that placed additional pressure on judges to oftentimes rush through the cases of these vulnerable children and potentially render decisions that don't uphold due process and don't give these kids a fair opportunity to seek the protection that they may qualify for under the law.
Thank you. So it was a reaffirmation, but highlighting that it also includes unaccompanied children, whereas before that 2018 guidance didn't specify that.
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
This is Wendy Young. Just to add another point to Jason's remarks, it's also interesting to see how this aligns with the average period of custody for children currently, which is hovering around that 60-day window, which is roughly twice what it was under the prior administration. So that is also forcing a full adjudication while the child's in custody, which adds additional layers of complication and, interferes with the ability of the child to access counsel.
Thank you.
And thank you for your question. Once again, a friendly reminder to our audience, please return to your handset if you're using a speakerphone today prior to pressing star and one if you would like to ask a live question. We'll hear next from Suzanne Moniak at Law 360. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having the call today. I just wanted to confirm, is Houston the first immigration court to pilot this program requiring detained children to appear remotely? Or are you aware of this pilot happening or soon to be happening at other immigration courts? And second, I was curious if you guys are preparing any litigation to challenge the pilot if it does go forward on March 9th.
Sure. So it's our understanding that Houston at present is the sole location in which this pilot program will occur. But based on available information and given that this Houston operation seems to be viewed as a test run for the use of VTC technology for unaccompanied kids, there is grave concern that this could mark the first step towards the establishment of a single national VTC docket that would encompass every detained unaccompanied child in the nation. And I'm sorry, I think you may have had an additional question that I might not have addressed.
Litigation.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. I'm not aware of any pending litigation on this issue. I don't know if anyone else on the call is.
Judy or John, did you want to add anything to that?
I'm not aware of anything.
I guess my question was if you guys are planning to file anything if this goes forward. Not if it's already been filed.
Our primary focus at present is on the disastrous policy implications of this program. As a matter of policy, it's unambiguous that use of a technology that prevents a child from understanding what's happening during an immigration court proceeding is bad policy. It's unambiguous that other policies that prevent a child from obtaining essential counsel is bad policy. So we think as a matter of policy, EOIR without delay should pull the plug on the VTC program, and the administration should reverse the other policies that we've addressed today.
All right, thank you.
And once again, to our phone audience today, if you would like to ask a question or need clarification on anything covered in today's update, simply press star and one on your telephone keypad, but not before returning to your handset prior to pressing star and one for your question. We'll allow just a few more moments to give everyone a chance to signal.